Boss Hole Chronicles are brought to you by Real Good Ventures, a talent optimization firm helping organizations diagnose their most critical people and execution issues with world-class analytics. Make sure to check out all the resources in the show notes and be sure to follow us and share your feedback. Enjoy today's episode. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Boss Hole Chronicles. It's good to have you with us. And as always, I'm joined by my friend, colleague, amazing partner, Sarah Best. Sarah, how are you this wonderful day?
Hola, I'm awesome, John. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
That's the first bilingual introduction that we've had in the Boss Hole Chronicles. That's good. Well, it's good to have you here. And as always, we're excited to be bringing to you another subject matter expert episode of the Boss Hole Chronicles. Very excited today simply because we are joined by Mr. Craig Weber, and we're going to be co-presenting with Craig at the Optima Conference this May. So I would encourage all of our listeners, check the show notes and go ahead and register for Optima. We're really excited about the topic, which will incorporate not only Boss Hole issues, but also Craig's work around conversational capacity. Let me give you a little bit about his background. Craig has been associated and working with organizations such as the Ken Blanchard Companies to create a conversational capacity course. He's also worked with, just get ready for this list of clients, Kaiser Permanente, NASA, the Royal Bank of Canada, Boeing, RSPCA, Queensland, the Bank of Hawaii, SAP, the Australian Commonwealth Department of Defense, the CDC, Medical University of South Carolina, Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, and the Child Poverty Collaborative of Cincinnati. I have to take a breath after that, Craig, because that's just simply amazing. He's also been a Vistage speaker for over 21 years. But we are especially excited that he's joining us today to talk about his work around boss hole prevention and boss hole intervention with some very unique perspectives on that. But to really kick it off, Sarah, I just want to throw it over to you.
Hey, Craig, welcome to the Boss Hole Chronicles. It's so good to have you today.
John, Sarah, thanks for inviting me.
You come to us from California. Your experiences and your knowledge are extensive. You've written two great books, Conversational Capacity, and most recently in 2019, Influence in Action, which is kind of a how to build conversational capacity. Just a heads up for our listeners, we'll dig in our Optima session a little bit further into conversational capacity. But in reality, it's been called a conversational martial art. So you've been known or kind of identified as somebody who's revolutionized business conversation as a discipline. And one of the things you talk to us about is, you know, your opponent in that martial art of conversation, which isn't what our listeners probably think. Unpack that for us for a moment, if you would.
Sure, I'm more than happy to. So yeah, I define conversational capacity in several ways. And one way is a conversational martial art. But to your point, Sarah, if you hear that, some people might say, oh, this is great. I'm going to use it against the team tomorrow. But in this conversational martial art, your opponent's never the people you're talking to. It is not the issue you're working to address. It's not even the context in which all this is happening. Those factors merely provide the mat on which the contest will occur. And in this conversational martial art, if we're going to be really effective under pressure, our opponent, it turns out, is our ego. And so we need the ability to stay purpose-driven rather than ego-driven under pressure. And so that is sort of a competence I help, you know, executives and teams learn to cultivate. How do we do a better job of keeping purpose in the driver's seat, particularly when we're dealing with a significant issue, a big challenge, a big decision, or a problem, where learning is the key to progress. So you could define conversational capacity at the individual level and at the collective level as the ability to stay purpose-driven under pressure.
That's powerful. And I think about how many people may not even know the purpose. Like they're so sideways and twisted around because of the complexity of their business or the challenges on their team. How do people really put that in the driver's seat in your experience?
Good question. Yeah, it's funny because once you start realizing, okay, purpose-driven under pressure, I like that. What is the purpose? You know, so you think about a meeting, right? What's the purpose of the meeting? And that sounds obvious, but a lot of people struggle with that. In fact, years ago, I was hired by someone to help build the conversational capacity of their team. And they asked me to sit in a couple of staff meetings, just to kind of observe what was happening. Just take some notes on the behavioral patterns you notice. And as we were walking down the hallway toward the meeting, I said, well, just so I know what to look for, what's the purpose of this meeting? And the person looked at me like I was an idiot and said, it's a meeting. And I said, okay, fair enough. Let me ask the question differently. What do you expect to be different in the business after this meeting? And the response was, I never thought of it that way before. And so, you know, sometimes it's really hard to, you know, even identify what is the purpose of the conversation we're having here? Is it to solve a problem? Is it to share information? Is it to make a decision? Is it to resolve a conflict? And then my job is to make sure the way we're conversing with each other lines up with that purpose.
And so it requires not only self-awareness, it requires quite a bit more. I'm just intrigued though, too, you know, the mat. So you describe the mat as sort of the platform or the forum where that martial art of communication happens, and the opponent is the ego. And in your book, Influence in Action, you talk about, you know, wrestle them to the mat, wrestle your ego to the mat. I would love to know not only your take on that, but any personal encounters or stories you can share about that would help our listeners clue into exactly what that means.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think a lot of times you're right. The awareness is really key. And one of the things I help people cultivate is a higher degree of awareness around the factors that tend to knock them off balance under pressure, kind of trigger that ego-driven response. So often it's something like a fear of looking and feeling stupid, a sense of being treated with disrespect or being treated unfairly. And suddenly, purpose goes out the window and my ego gets hooked and I'm off to the races. I begin arguing. I'm not listening. I'm engaging in, I'm shutting down and acquiescing when I should be speaking up and raising my hand. And so how do I learn to catch it quickly when I'm being triggered in a more ego-driven direction? How do I not let my emotional responses get the best of me, literally, in a tough conversation? And that's a really key part of the practice. It's not all of it. There's a cognitive component and a behavioral component as well. But that emotional component, the awareness, is really key. And I did work as an example with an organization years ago. And I had someone who went through the workshop, a CEO of a company, and said, you know, I am extremely aggressive. I have a really strong ego. I don't listen to anybody. I'm always right. And it's killing me. Mm-hmm. So after my workshop, said, this is a real problem for me. And so he actually got really excited about engaging his team more in conversation. And he went back and started trying to do it with some of the behaviors I teach, right? Testing his own view to invite people to challenge his thinking, inquiring into the views of others to find out more about how they're looking at an issue and not just shoving his view down everyone's throat. He said, and it didn't work at all. It was really frustrating. And so I got a call from him saying, look, I'm doing this and it's not working. And I said, well, you know, give me a couple examples of how you've been using these skills. And he was doing a reasonably decent job. And I said, look, you're doing a reasonably decent job of this. Why is it you think the team isn't taking you seriously? And he responded to me like I was a moron. I go, seriously? They think I'm just trying to pull them into the open for a cleaner shot.
Mm. Wow.
You know, he says, so it was like, to him, it was obvious. They don't trust me, right? They just think I'm just conversational skeet shooting. I want your view so I can club it. And so I didn't come up with this strategy. He was working with a coach, and the coach came up with the idea with him. And he actually went back to his team and said, look, I've been trying to change the way I operate with this team. I have made it difficult for any of you to bring your A game to the business, to challenge me publicly in the past. And I'm trying to do that by inviting you into the conversations more. And you don't trust me. He says, I don't blame you. I don't trust me yet. I'm not good at this. He says, but we can't just wait for the trust to arrive. So I'm going to make a new rule in this team that's going to be difficult for all of us. I'm going to put a tough idea on the table. I'm going to explain it. And I'm going to ask you for input. And when I ask you for input, we're going to go around the table. I want to hear from every single one of you. No one gets a pass. And I don't want to hear anything positive. I'm going to force every one of you to take a shot at my thinking. He says, I'll tell you right now, that will not be easy for me to take. You know me. You know, that's going to be really hard for me to sit here and absorb. And I'm not stupid. This is going to be a lot harder for you than it is for me. I get that. He said, I just don't know how else to undo what I've done to this team.
Wow.
And what happened?
And they all quit. No, I'm just kidding.
No, of course not. Right. Well, I have to imagine before we hear that, I have to imagine that one, for some, it was very refreshing. probably a bit stunning, but his transparency and his vulnerability, that's huge. I mean, that is really, and owning the fact that it's going to be tough for him. So yes, let's hear what the result was.
And that was it. So slowly over time, especially working with the coach he was working with, I mean, slowly getting to the point where, you know, you're making it difficult for people in your team not to challenge you. And I think that's a key idea here. What's the work I need to do to make it difficult for my team not to help me think in a clear way when I'm making a decision? Right. How do I make it difficult for my team not to bring their best thinking and their analysis to the decisions we're making? And so that does require something you said, John, vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I actually define conversational capacity as the ability, and this could be of an individual, but it's also of a team of people collectively. How do we do a better job of staying in a sweet spot in a conversation where candor and courage are balanced with curiosity and humility?
Right.
And vulnerability is the working edge of that humility, right? So that's a really key component to building your individual conversational capacity and that of your team. The team had to do a better job of strengthening their candor and courage. This is going to be a risky thing for them to push back on the boss, especially sure. given his previous behavior. But at the same time, the boss has got to dramatically ramp up the curiosity and the humility piece. So that's kind of the work and helping teams and individuals do is to get better at set your ego aside, balance candor and courage with curiosity and humility. And in any given context, you know, sometimes the candor and courage is going to be the struggle, you know, raising your hand and speaking up when everyone on the team loves an idea and maybe pointing out a fault. That takes right. a lot of guts. Other times it's that curiosity and humility is the big problem, you know? And so again, ego tends to cause us to go with what's comfortable or, you know, making us feel right. Purpose is, I got to set those things aside and focus on what we're trying to accomplish here.
Right.
Well, I love that you mentioned vulnerability, Craig. Brené Brown describes that as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Yes. And we know that it's essential to trust building, you know, on a team, especially a high level yeah. kind of team. And you created a nice segue for us to venture into the world of behavioral dynamics and behavioral data. And I think this is where ego intersects a little bit with our natural behavioral drives, which tend, you know, for some of us are pretty strong, either in the dominance category, we're assertive and very confident in our own ideas, or even in the other direction where, you know, harmony and collaboration and fear of rocking the boat are so strong that it just, until there's 100% certainty, it doesn't make sense to speak up. So helping people come, you know, into the pool of vulnerability and candor is really important work. So if we look at all three of us, you know, we're big fans and certified partners of the Predictive Index. And Craig, you're well-versed in the PI. You're a venturer. John is a captain. I'm a persuader. So we all have that high dominance and that low patience. The high dominance and the right. low patience create, you know, quite an intensity about proactive nature and going after things and impatience and let's get there and not listening very well. So really, I think what you're also talking about, besides wrestling the ego to the mat, it's adapting, learning how to adapt those very natural behavioral tendencies that we have. You know, I can remember being a kid and, you know, being in line and watching, you know, feeling someone else come up alongside me and automatically taking a step forward. Like, oh no, you're not going to beat me. And you know, you can't make that up. There's part of our natural behavioral wiring that will always predispose us to, I think, trip up in these kind of unique conversational experiences. But it's that self-awareness, you know, deep understanding of what drives us. And then it's the adapting, which you've started talking about some of the ways you teach and the tools you provide for people to help them learn how to adapt. You know, we talk about the skills of emotional intelligence, same thing. It's learning impulse control. It's identifying those triggers and really taking measure, building muscle in a way to help use those EQ competencies. Do you want to say anything more about that?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. You know, someone reviewed my first book, Conversational Capacity, a few years ago and said, conversational capacity is in essence, operationalized emotional intelligence, because you're getting clear about what you're bringing to the conversation, my behavioral proclivities, my emotional reactions in the moment, my, you know, perceived level of expertise, whatever it might be. And I can't change those things. I mean, I'm bringing them to the table, but I can learn to recognize and manage them. So people say, doesn't this require you to change your personality? No, but it does require you manage your personality in a more rigorous and responsible way.
Right.
No, so your behavioral tendencies are not your destiny. You can take responsibility for behaving in a more intentional way, you know, despite them. But it does take some work. It does take some practice. It does take a much higher degree of awareness.
Oh, no question. And, you know, to that point, when I think about, so Sarah mentions the three of us, you know, a persuader, a captain, an adventurer, we're what we would consider to be exploring types of individuals, very comfortable with innovation, agility, moving things forward. And at the same time, very much a proactive kind of characteristic. And so when we run into resistance, I know for myself, when I think about ego and I think about what I would refer to as benign neglect, we oftentimes say for certain leaders, why say anything? If somebody presents something, don't use your words to cut them down. Don't diminish their input. And I've had to really learn that over the years. And I think it comes with experience, but I think about the ego and I think about benign neglect. Do I really have to say anything at this point? That seems to resonate, or that seems very inherent in when you talk about conversational capacity and also understanding when the right time is to say anything and also the time to shut up.
Right. And that requires a tremendous amount of awareness if you think about it, because you're now not just paying attention to your own internal reactions, what you bring to the table. Right. You're paying attention to what other people are bringing to the table. So you're watching what's happening around you. And at the same time, you're keeping an eye on the purpose of the exchange. So I'm watching others. I'm watching the context. What are we trying to get done here? And I'm managing my own behaviors. So I say you should never, if you're trying to build your conversational capacity, you should never be bored in a meeting again. There's a lot to be paying attention to if you know where to look.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think that's spot on. And so what is the appropriate behavioral response right now, given the purpose of the exchange? And sometimes keeping your mouth shut and not speaking and giving the airspace to other people is the appropriate response, right? So just sitting back and not participating. Or if there's an issue that's not being addressed, the team's avoiding it, sometimes raising your hand, putting it on the table and trying to spark a conversation around it is the way to keep, you know, what's happening in the meeting and the purpose of the meeting in closer sync. So yeah, there's a lot going on there. So I agree with you 100%.
It's very complex. It requires a lot of tenacity. As we wrap up our session, which really is a great precursor to the Optima session coming up on May 12th. And again, you know, we'll make sure that link is in the show notes. And by the way, I just have to say the Optima conference is, in my experience, the best conference I've ever attended in relationship to designing, hiring, inspiring, and building high-performing teams. So our communication skills, our leadership skills, there's so much to it. And the lineup of keynote speakers is over the top. But as we head into the home stretch here, I was really struck when I was looking at your most recent book, Influence in Action, you know, this idea of pace yourself. And that's something I certainly am very comfortable coaching clients to do, something I'm not always good at myself. But what parting thoughts do you have for our listeners today, Craig, about, you know, this journey that leaders need to be on, you know, to develop that conversational capacity and that insight and that emotional management? Tell us about pace yourself as we wrap it up.
Yeah, that's a great way to wrap up. So I talk about conversational capacity as a discipline. This is not a gimmick. It is not just a set of ideas. You memorize them and you're done. This takes practice. Like any discipline, you got to put in the work. And so I would look at this as more, you know, the cliche, you know, it's running a marathon, not running a sprint. And so what's the work you need to do day by day to get better at this? And even when you trip up and fall down and have a really bad experience in a meeting, use that as an opportunity to learn. What tripped me up? You know, what hooked me? Why did I behave in such a defensive reaction? What would be a better way to respond next time I catch it? And so I really encourage people to look at this as a discipline that they're going to build over time, not as something they're going to master right away. So I'll often say, you know, the upside to my work is that it works. The downside, it takes work. You know, it's not a gimmick. You're not just going to, you know, memorize a few quotes and then jump in a meeting, spew them out, and everything's going to work well. This actually takes practice. And like any practice, you got to be patient. You know, you're going to take a while. The first time you ever go, you know, sit down at a piano and try to play a chord, it's like, wow, this is harder than it looks when you watch it. Or the first time you pick up a tennis rack, it's like, wow, you know, they look pretty straightforward on TV. This is really difficult. And the key is just to get out there and keep hitting the ball. Nice. And so I talk about the conversational capacity as a martial art. A way to think about it is the workplace is your dojo. Every meeting, every decision, every colleague who pushes a button, every person whose personality doesn't exactly gel with yours now becomes an opportunity to get better at this. And so that's hopefully one way to respond to your question that is helpful.
Absolutely. Well, I can't wait to unpack our next conversation when we're speaking together at Optima. We'll be digging in a bit further to conversational capacity and really getting to hear more about your experiences, Craig. You're a fascinating guy. And we thank you for your time today. Great to have you on the show.
It was my genuine pleasure. Again, thank you both for the invitation. I had a really good time.
We'd like to thank our guests today on the Boss Hole Chronicles. And if you have a Boss Hole Chronicles story of your own, please email us at mystory@thebossholechronicles.com. Once again, mystory@thebossholechronicles.com. We'll see you again soon.